Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
Welcome to Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, a Cubs-centric podcast brought to you by Good Karma Brands, ESPN 1000, and our friends at Arlington Toyota. Good to have you on board as we complete the first month of this pod. Hope you've enjoyed the ride so far. We drop these episodes twice weekly, so tell your friends and family about it. Make sure you subscribe. And of course, for more daily Cubs content, you can catch my reports on ESPN 1000 throughout the week. Those shows available via the ESPN Chicago app as well if you miss my reports live. Coming up, we'll go inside the clubhouse and welcome Cubs pitcher Ben Brown to the podcast. He'll join me in just a few moments. We featured some guests over the last few episodes last week. We talked to Brewers GM Matt Arnold. Before that, it was Jason Kipnis. So we'll jump around. Not every episode we'll have a guest. In fact, Thursday we'll do an extra overloaded mailbag segment because we haven't done one in a week or so. And let's bring in producer Jack McGrath. Where can they leave questions and comments for me, Jack?
Yeah, Jess, they can leave comments in the YouTube comments. So just leave them in the comments of this video here, and I will go through all those and ask those to Jesse. The other one, too, just tweet me at JackMcGrath1000, and I will get to all those questions as well. So at JackMcGrath1000 on Twitter.
Keep your mic open, Jack, and we'll, of course, do that mailbag segment as we drop our second episode later in the week, probably Thursday afternoon. You'll be able to catch up there. All right, let's talk a little Cubs, Jack, before we get to Ben Brown, because I was a little surprised by this. It kind of snuck up on me. They're 13-4 in their last 17 games. That's the best record in Major League Baseball over that time frame. I know they were playing well. I didn't really think about them having the best record over the last 17 or so games. I think it's kind of like, oh, wow, they're sort of back.
Yeah, it feels like they're coming up in clutch moments finally, which you didn't get for that 10-game losing streak, where they're finally starting to hit again. We saw the walk-off on Monday night, and everything seems to be clicking, and PCA is carrying the load, too. I mean, when he's hot, the team's hot. When he starts out well, the entire team seems to move. And that we've talked before how they kind of missed that power bat in the middle of the lineup or even at the top of the lineup. Well, PCA recently, especially in the month of June, has been filling that role as kind of the guy who's helping them bounce out of that slump. So the way he's been rolling has obviously helped a lot, and things are going good.
You mentioned PCA, but the guy that really is the straw that stirs the drink there is Seiya Suzuki.
Yeah.
We've seen him come alive against good pitching. Mizorowski, Mason Miller. This stat surprised me. As you know, after Monday's game, it was four straight games with multiple RBI. That's tied for the longest streak in baseball this year. If on Tuesday night he gets two RBI or more, that'll be more than any player's had. That's surprising to me because, you know, you get a hot week, you'd figure somebody would have had, you know, five or more games with a couple RBI. But I feel like he's kind of the guy in that order. They don't have a Schwarber or Otani or Judge, but he's the closest thing they have. And you're seeing winning baseball with him sort of getting hot as well.
Yeah, and he's sitting with runners in scoring position a lot better than some of the other guys, too. So that helps out. He's having professional at-bats. And then, of course, it all came to fruition with the walk-off as well. So 100% agreed. He had a huge series against Milwaukee, and he's having a big series again against the Padres after walking it off.
All right, a couple more things before we get to Ben Brown. You got to give credit to this no-name bullpen. Yes, Ethan Roberts had a couple of moments there in Milwaukee. He goes on the IL, so maybe he was pitching a little tired or hurt. But eight relievers on Sunday, a few more on Monday to secure that win because that was a tight game. Look, they're doing pretty good. They're going to blow up again. We're all going to get upset over it. But there's a lot of guys doing some good things over there. Hollowell is the latest. Rollison's pretty solid. Yeah, Jacob Wedd had a moment, but he's been pretty good. Like, let's give some credit to these guys during this stretch where all the money's on the injured list right now.
Yeah, the bullpen, those guys have been pitching really well, and they're holding down the fort, and that's really all you kind of need them to do because the offense has been playing really well. The Cubs offense, for as much grief as they've been given, the Cubs still have the sixth most runs in baseball over the entire season. The offense is starting to hit. So you just need your bullpen to be okay and your starting pitching to be okay. And that'll lead to winning baseball when the offense is as good as it's been.
All right. Final thought regarding the Alex Bregman situation, talking about not hustling to first base on Sunday. I think a lot of the sort of online chatter or the phone callers on ESPN 1000, I think the majority kind of hit the nail on the head. They sort of understand you're not going to run full speed on every ground ball hit over 162. I know there's a segment of the population that thinks they should. It's just not going to happen. But I think the key here is picking your spots not to. Five-run lead, five-run deficit, ninth inning, no chance, whatever the case may be. But game on the line, one-run game, man on second, tying run. Like, those are the moments you need to run them out because you don't know when a guy is going to bobble it. And that's the key. You don't know. If you knew ahead of time, then, yeah, you could choose not to run because you know what I mean? Like, you don't have a crystal ball, but the game's out of hand. Different story. But in a tight game, and yeah, some people say, well, you're making $35 million. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the game situation because he's not wrong. If he ran hard every time to first base over 162, he probably would end up on the injured list. And not just him, a few other guys as well. So I get not doing it every single time, but you got to pick your spots when you don't do it. And that was a bad spot Sunday.
Yeah, I've said on ESPN 1000 already that I was very unhappy with it. And I don't like that now Alex Bregman is giving himself this built-in excuse for the future saying, oh, it wasn't that I was frustrated. It was that I am trying to prevent injury. And now when it happens again, he can just fall back on that. I feel like I don't know what conversations happen inside the clubhouse. I don't know if Craig Counsell talked to him directly or what happened there, but it's something that just felt like it needed to be addressed at some point because Bregman's supposed to be the leader. And in a big spot like that, that one stings when you see a guy jogging out of the box. And he's gotten criticism for it, as he should. And hopefully in a big spot, it doesn't happen again.
All right. That's our opening segment. Let's get to Ben Brown right now.
Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
Let's go inside the clubhouse with right-hander Ben Brown. Happens to be on the injured list. We'll get to that in a moment. But welcome, Ben, to the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Absolutely. Now, you guys lead the league in walk-off hits. So I'm not going to ask you where you were for all 10 of them. But as we tape this on Tuesday afternoon, where did you watch number 10 Monday night against the Padres? Where were you? Dugout, clubhouse, trainer's room, where were you?
Yeah, I'm doing my best I can do to be out there. Can't really put much out on the field right now. So me being on the bench and being supporting the guys is my best opportunity to help the team. And I was on the bench. I was special. I mean, it was a great inning. You can't really write up a better win against a team like that. They have a phenomenal pitching staff. The Padres are just a good team. So, I mean, anytime you can, you know, win a 3-2 ball game against them is a big deal. And kudos to the guys last night. Bullpen was awesome. Showed is looking great. Great defensive plays, timely hitting. It's just a really fun time to beat Cub, and seeing the guys just continue to just overcome adversity has been really encouraging this year.
Absolutely. Good record as of late, 13-4 in your last 17 games. Of course, in the middle of that, you went on the injured list. We'll get to that again in a second. Take us inside the clubhouse. I was there as well on Monday night after the walk-off. Kind of exciting. And then everybody turned to the TVs to watch the soccer shootout. I don't know if you were involved in that as well, but that kind of was a fun little, you know, side note to the walk-off. But what's it like in the clubhouse after a win and then to watch soccer with your teammates?
Yeah, I mean, we're just a bunch of normal guys. Like, we're going to go have some dinner and watch some soccer and talk about normal things and obviously celebrate the win. And there's so many takeaways from a game like that. And we, of course, we were talking about that. And you know, last couple of games has been really impressive with some guys stepping up. Last night with Gavin coming in and looking great. Two nights ago with Jordan against Milwaukee. Like, there's just been, you know, time after time, just guys stepping up into huge spots. And, you know, we're talking about that and showed his little bullet slider he was throwing yesterday, cutter. Like, there's just a ton of things to take away. But yeah, just watching some soccer, having fun. You know, it's a cool time. You know, the World Cup time is a lot of fun in the middle of summer when you're playing baseball too. It's cool.
For sure, for sure. And Sunday's win in Milwaukee was kind of exciting too. So you had the 10 walk-offs and a few extra inning affairs and kind of turned things around after some kind of up and down baseball. And you were part of that, you know, pitching very well, but until you got hurt. And let's get to that. But I was wondering if you were in the clubhouse or in the dugout for the walk-off, because, like, it's pretty crowded in the trainer's room these days, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, I was in Milwaukee, and yet all your kind of walking injured there, including yourself and Maton and Taillon. I mean, it's kind of wild. I guess it's, you know, every team kind of goes through it. I saw the Mariners GM talking about their injuries, but is it weird to just look left and right and there's just another injured pitcher, you know, next to you in the locker room? It's weird.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it. You know, you can't really pinpoint one thing or another. I think our training staff is incredible. I think our strength coaches are incredible. Our workload management's great. There's no one getting abused here. There's no one getting mismanaged here. Kudos to just everyone on the staff. We put so much into staying healthy. Our nutrition's awesome. But yeah, like, we're going through it right now. I think, you know, for a couple of weeks when I'm just kind of wearing it with my neck, and you don't want to be the guy that goes on it. No one wants to be on the injured list. No one wants to be the next domino to fall. And, you know, it's that time of the year where it hurts a little bit more. I think, you know, if we're talking April, March, April, there's more of like a, hey, this might be what's best for me and the team. And I think we're at the time of the year where, like, getting hurt doesn't really help anybody. But it's important to be healthy and to be available, obviously. So it doesn't help anyone to not be healthy and available. That's just the reality of injuries. And, you know, every single guy wants to be out there really bad. Every single guy is pushing to come back. No one's throwing in the towel. Our trainers are probably working nonstop at this point. It's just part of the game. Can't point anything to it. One thing I will say is our position players just been carrying the load. They've been posting up every day, and that's been really awesome to see. And, you know, I know a lot of other teams, there's always something. Like, right now it's our pitching staff. Some other teams might have like one or two contributors on the offensive side that are down. And, you know, our position players have really been able, you know, with the defense they play, have been able to really back us up in this time. And when maybe, you know, we're beat up or we're going through some things. So, you know, it's a team effort, even with the injuries.
One more thing about that before we get to your unique injury. Talking to you now in the locker room and even other injured players, maybe you guys have been trained. I'm amazed at the sort of positive public face you guys put on. Because I'd be down, like, but maybe privately you're a little bit more upset. Like, it is amazing. You talk to Matthew Boyd, it's always a positive attitude, even through injuries. Have you been just trained to be like that mentally or privately? Are you really upset, or like, how's it work?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for everybody. Like, you know, everyone handles hard things differently. Obviously, being upset, it's not going to help anyone. You know, being just mad and sad, it's not going to help the team win. But, you know, obviously, like, we're all dealing with it. There was a lot of frustration. I think the frustration for me was, you know, the reality that I was going to have to shut it down, you know, and that's frustrating and that's sad and that's a lonely feeling. And, you know, sucks, you know, whether it's a coach coming out in the middle of the game to come get you, or, you know, I'm honestly kind of blessed that mine was in the middle of the week, because that's, you know, at least you're able to kind of set up your game planning for my start day rather than, you know, letting the bullpen wear it for eight innings or whatever it would have been. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of it. And I think, like, you know, the people at home probably wear it the most, you know, my wife or whatever My wife is probably wearing it worse than my teammates are, because she's, you know, there's some frustration there. And, you know, you're just constantly thinking about what to do next, and you're not really where your feet are. So that's a challenge during rehab. It's just like trying to be one day after another and not thinking about timelines too much, or I mean, thinking about timelines, but you're not just over consumed with, you know, what's going to happen a month from now. You're more just, what can I control today?
So let's get to your injury. Kind of unique. Maybe you could go through the timeline when it first started to pop up again, because this is something you experienced in 24. And what exactly is it? It's just kind of a unique one.
Yeah. I started feeling it in my second San Francisco start. And it came on pretty quick. Certainly, you know, like just it became kind of limiting that start. I think I would say I was like a little banged up for a little bit, which would make sense for the what the injury is like a stress injury rather than like an acute traumatic thing. I felt it kind of come on pretty hard then, and grinded through my next start, and velo was down, which like I said is kind of another blessing in disguise. I wasn't just cranking on it and cranking on it and cranking on it for months, and then I got to the point where, you know, there's no kind of bouncing back from that. It was a 2-week thing, which is really encouraging, honestly, as far as how my body feels right now and bouncing back from that. I think we've been very detailed about this injury, which, you know, maybe other teams are, you know, when you hear like a back strain or something, or like a neck strain, like it could be what I have. It's just like they're not getting so far into detail of what it is. I think that that's because of what happened in 2024. Like there is maybe like the need to be a little bit more upfront because of kind of all the stuff that was going on in 24. And I understand that for sure. And I think it's, you know, being honest to everybody of what it is, and it kind of gives everyone a clear expectation of what to expect. And, I would say there's no reason to look at this any different than if someone had a chronic hamstring issue.
Okay.
Maybe not chronic hamstring, but if someone popped their hammy 2 years ago and it happened again, there's no reason to look at my neck like it's anything different than that.
Yeah.
It's a bone, but at the same time, it's not like I have brittle bones or a bone issue or there's nothing wrong with, you know, not to say there's anything wrong with people that have that, but there's nothing that's going to, I don't have any career threatening neck injury, or my bones aren't decaying. All my other bones feel fine. There's no nerve, anything super structural. It's just that there's a lot of that part of my body is taking on stress. It's not handling it very well, and it's getting to the point where I can't keep going. And that would be the same thing if, you know, my body takes on, if my hamstrings take on a lot of stress, it doesn't handle it very well, and at the end of it, you know, you pull your hammy. So like, what do guys do who have a history of hamstring issues is that they're constantly in the weight room working on it. They're doing things, isometrics and different kinds of training. They're being a little bit more, you know, there's more mobility work that goes into it. There's more treatment. And that's how they kind of stay on top of it. And for me, I think because we treated it like it was, or at least I treated it like it was a freak injury because of kind of the unknown diagnosis in 24, I kind of just kicked it under the rug. I wouldn't say in like in the negligent way, but like, hey, this isn't going to happen again. This is a freak thing. I work hard. I put my attention towards a lot of things. I've overcame a lot of over the last couple of years. It's not like I don't do anything in the off seasons, but it wasn't like I was really super focused on this being a recurring injury, or the possibility of that. And the reality is that it is. And, it's just something I'm gonna have to take care of and stay on top of. And, this is not a career threatening injury. This isn't a season threatening injury. It's just something I got to stay on top of. So
two follow-ups, and then I want to move on. You're holding the camera. So for people watching, is it like here? Is it here? Left side, right? Where is it?
Yeah. It's just the middle of my left side of my neck.
Left side of the neck. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And do you have to,
not like TOS related or anything like that. Yeah.
Do you have to adjust your delivery? Is that what you said over the weekend? I wasn't exactly sure.
I think examine. Okay. I think there might be some low-hanging fruit. I think nothing here is calling for traumatic changes.
Okay.
Like if there's some low-hanging fruit that we can, you know, whether it's from a nutritional standpoint, from a weight room standpoint, from a pitching mechanics, I'm not going to do anything that's going to take away from who I am on the mound. At least in season especially. Like in the off season, it's a time to make some changes that are necessary. I've done that every offseason, it feels like, whether it's pitch design or mechanics or whatever the case is. Like, you have an opportunity, you have a long opportunity to do that. These next couple of weeks aren't going to be, I'm not going to show up pitching in whenever I come back and you guys are going to be like, wow, it's a completely different guy.
Sure.
That's going to look very similar. I'm just going to have a healthy bone and feel good. So that's Lord willing. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully you can pick off where you left off. Obviously, pick up where you left off. You know, I hate to say it, but you're probably on the way to the All-Star game, but yeah, we'll set that aside. Plenty of time in your career to do that. But I'm fascinated by your game now. If you go to your Baseball Savant page, you know, the fastball line and the curve are now matching. You throw them equally. So there's deception there because obviously the hitter doesn't know what's coming. Now you add the sinker, which to me there's a deception in that because it's the same velocity as your four seam. So if you're throwing a fastball, they don't know if it's sinking or coming right at them. And if you're throwing a curve, they don't know if it's a fastball or a curve because you don't really show it, you know, as much as you used to. I'm fascinated by all this. I assume this was kind of all by design. Obviously, adding the sinker, you know, to be a starter, you needed to do that. But like, just all of it feels like it's come together, and it there was a plan behind it. Does that sound right?
For sure. Yeah, I think at the end of last year, I mean, the reality of how I pitched last year, I know, like, we've been, you know, a lot of it's like it was so bad and now it's so good. But at the same time, like, if I performed closer to what my expected stats were, maybe I have a 4.5 ERA, maybe a high 4, and then we're not really calling last year as much of a disaster as much of a learning experience. That's always good to kind of hold on to that, because you don't really want to go into any situation thinking that you're just so bad that you're not competitive. Like, I do believe that I was able to compete last year. There was a lot of games that got away from me, but there was also a lot of games I did really well in. I think a lot of that was just like fixing a lot of the mental approach too. Like, when I talked about low-hanging fruit in my injury, like not being able to compete in the first inning was really bad for me last year. If we can take away the first inning of my stat line, then I'm a little bit closer to where I would have been expected to pitch, right?
So, by the way, you're not the only pitcher that's had issues in the first inning as a young guy or even a veteran, because as counsel says, the first time you're on the mound in 5 days, especially when you're young, your routine may not be completely set. So it fits is the point.
Yeah, and I was just working through some stuff, and you know, obviously it wasn't the dream season, but I was able to take away some really important things. My stats probably reflected that I pitched better against righties and lefties last year, but I didn't think so at all. I felt so uncomfortable against right-hand hitters last year. I felt pigeonholed. And that's where I think the sinker was just going to play. I don't think my four seam, I throw it hard, but it's not a pitch that you can just keyhole middle and miss bats. Like, some people are blessed with that ability. Whether it's with like a low VAA or, you know, some sort of mechanical funk, but I don't have that. So in order for me to miss bats with the four seam, it has to be like a chase up. It's tough for me to get soft contact with it, as it is for anyone who kind of throws a four seam that's not going to miss a ton of bats. You're not going to get a lot of soft contact on fastballs in today's baseball. So the sinker was just going to be huge for me. I just feel like it was an opportunity for me to pitch behind in counts, to produce weak contact, to really even the playing field and make me a threat against righties. That was the first thing. There were some mechanical adjustments. I really thought that if I could move a little bit better, movement quality would be a little bit better. I think we're seeing that in the consistency of the curveball this year. And then just the mental game stuff and just, you know, locking that in. So I think it was like probably three separate things. I think the mental stuff was probably the most important, just from, you know, just being a better competitor. I threw 97 last year and had a good curveball, and I wasn't where I am this year because of that. So, it's just, you know, kind of like it was definitely a planned attack for sure.
Well, that curveball is devastating. I remember, I think I even mentioned to you, Christian Yelich is kind of shaking his head at it because it is definitely your out pitch. Last thing on that, like, when did you realize you had a great curveball? I mean, how old were you when you started to develop a great curveball?
I think when I came back from Tommy John, I always had pretty good command, threw a lot of strikes coming up. But I think when I came back from Tommy John, the stuff just started to take up a little bit. It started to grow up. I was young. I mean, like 2021, started throwing it harder and harder. And this is kind of right around the same time this, you know, hard breaking balls became like the status quo. You know, it's either you throw a really good sweeper or you throw a hard breaking ball. There's not like the age of I shouldn't say it's dead, but like it's slowly going away of like the slower breaking ball and you know, like you kind of, it's just hitting is really advancing, pitching is really hard. So as that's the velo started to kick up, the Phillies kind of embraced it. They're like, hey, we like this. It probably plays more like a bullet slider from the standpoint of like movement quality, but there it is a depthier bullet slider, so that's why it would be still considered a curveball. And I spike it. There's not really a lot of spiked bullet sliders, so
yeah,
it's still knuckle curve, but yeah, it's been a really good pitch for me over the last, you know, 5 years. It's been kind of an equalizer, which has been sweet.
Okay, before I let you go, Ben, let's do the lightning round. A bunch of different questions. There's no wrong answers here. Basically, your opinion. Let's start with this one. Have you ever seen Colin Ray get mad? And if so, when? Because that guy's heartbeat is as slow as they come. He certainly doesn't show it publicly. Have you ever seen him get mad?
Yeah, no. No. I mean, I would say he's never showed his emotions. I think he's definitely been mad before, but he's not going to let anyone see it. He has a little head shake. That's about it. That's about as much as you'll see from him. But I guarantee he does get fired up. He just doesn't let anyone see his emotions, which is awesome skill. I mean, it's impressive.
But that's a good hint for fans. Yeah. If they see the head shake, then
I don't know. That's it. But like that's about all he'll ever show out there.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Tell us one, let's call it semi-interesting thing you've done on the road this season or just since you've been in the big leagues. Can you think of one?
This
museum guy, lake guy, ocean guy, anything?
Yeah, we love San Diego. Going over Coronado, just sitting by the water. It's a special opportunity to, you know, soak up some sun and enjoy a really beautiful part of the United States.
Nice. Okay, so since my son saw you at a coffee shop, what's your go-to coffee order? That's a little fancy, not straight coffee. What do you like to get?
Yeah, if we're going to a coffee shop, you know, we're usually doing our due diligence and finding the spots that are a little bit, you know, better coffee. And I'll get a cortado, which is like 2 ounces of espresso, 2 ounces of milk. It's kind of a hard drink to master. So you have a pretty good idea if the coffee shop's solid or not by the cortado.
Let's stay on the food drink issue. You know, as an athlete, what's the food you probably should not have, but you indulge a little bit in?
Probably like tortilla chips.
That's okay. Kinda,
yeah, tortilla chips. That would be like the one thing that, all of a sudden, like you got a bag down in a day. That would be like my one pretty bad. I can definitely have a little bit too many tortilla chips.
Well, you're the former Cub Jason Hamill had hydration issues, so he used to eat potato chips all the time.
All right.
So when you're ordered to eat chips, that's not a bad thing, right?
No, I'm waiting for someone to do that for me.
All right, last one. Who likes to celebrate a win more than anybody other than Danny, the equipment guy? You know, Danny, I know, goes crazy. Who's a player that likes to kind of celebrate it?
Man, Danny loves winning.
Yeah, he does.
We all love winning. Celebrate a win more than anybody. I mean, I love Ballesteros. I mean,
oh yeah,
yeah. That he's super talented. He's gonna do amazing things for us this year, and he already has. But yeah, Bally is such a great celebrator and pumps up the team a bunch. And nothing crazy. Just like he's just always so excited. He's such a great teammate. He loves being around the guys and pumping this up. So I'd say Bally.
Sounds great. Ben, thanks for your time. We're going to see you on the mound maybe a month from now.
Let's keep on working. I'm feeling good just one day at a time, but it's going to be good.
Awesome. Thank you for joining me. I'll see you over at the ballpark. All right.
Appreciate you, Jesse.